Yeah, what does it mean?
Some kind of wheel or something?
This is, the Tibetan word, all the Tibetan sounds for kor mean round. Okay? Some famous kors are
Kyung
kor, which means a disc, which is what mandala is, the Tibetan translation for mandala means a disc. Gormo, which means a dollar in Tibetan, means the ground coin. Kor lo means a wheel on a car. Okay, so there are all these words with kor sounding that mean to go around. Okay, and this is supposedly what you have renunciation about, the state of korwa. It means to circle, to go around and around. Yes.
That's the literal translation, right? Definition.
You tell me.
Well, a lot of people think it's a place, but actually it's a state of mind.
I'm going to tell you. Good question. Okay. Well, yeah, most people think it's this world. You know? And that's what samsara is. And if I got out of samsara, I would somehow leave this world. Most people think, I mean, when you ask people what's samsara, what is it you're trying to avoid by coming to this stupid class week after week? No, you're trying to avoid samsara. Yeah, suffering's not bad. Suffering's not bad. Okay, I'll give you the definition of samsara.
So ra, it means the whole two words, kora?
Yeah, kora. This is what the whole of the says. He says that renunciation is the desire to get out of korwa. And if you don't know what korwa is, then how are you going to want to get out of it? So he says, first you have to know why you're in korwa and what korwa is. So he says, it makes a noun out of most things.
P-O-Y?
Yeah, P-O-Y.
Pungui?
What's the second letter of the second syllable? Here?
Yeah.
Cha. Okay. Ugly, an ugly cha. Shouldn't have a head letter, unless they have that. I'm going to say, Uncle Tinker, I can. Blessing up. Uncle Tinker, who is that? Raju Pani's.
Translation.
One of the Tibetans I teach today told me that you said, Sirin.
There's a joke, they said, Gyav Shin. They bow and they say, to foreigners, and they say, Gyav Shin, which means shut yourself up. They say, thank you.
Is that because they never said anything in Tibet and they're expected to say something?
Yeah, they didn't say anything. Mongolians, they say,
Gyav Shin.
No, you don't learn all of that words. People always learn the profanity first.
Is it really profanity, or just...
No, it's just a little bit implied.
It's the opposite of what people expect, man.
It's like a joke.
It's like shut your trap or something like that.
Yeah, it's
fine. Okay,
not a good thing to learn. Now you all remember. Okay, please say Sakche.
Sakche.
Nyelenge.
Nyelenge.
Pungbe.
Pungbe.
Gin.
Gin.
Yangne.
Yangne.
Yanggu.
Yanggu.
Lembani.
Lembani.
Korwa.
Korwa.
Yin.
Yin.
Coral means what?
Circle of life.
Okay. Super
Yin means what?
It is.
Okay. So, da-da-da-da-da-da is what Korwa is. These two lines is the definition of samsara. That's what samsara is. It's amazing, and you can talk to a lot of people who are, you know, learning Buddhism, a lot of people, and even a lot of people, you know, teaching Buddhism, and they can't describe to you samsara. And that means they don't know what they're trying to get liberated from. Okay, they don't know clearly what they really want to get freedom from.
I thought it was the three types of suffering.
Not defined that way. Okay, we'll define it right now. Okay, sakche means impure. Impure. Sak means literally a stain or an impurity. Sakche means impure.
Sakche is impure?
Yes. Nirlan is a very difficult word. It means taken on. Taken on. Which you took on. Nirlan ki pongbo. Pongbo means heaps. You've heard of the five heaps. There are five parts of you. There are five parts to your being. They range from your physical parts, fingers, head, up to your mental part, your very awareness. These are the five parts to a person. They're called heaps because Pungnan Kego Rikidu Pumbo Keje Kamnam Yin, the first chapter of the Abhidhamma. They're called heaps because they're piles of stuff. You know, like your physical body has got your ears, eyes, nose. That's why they're called heaps. In Tibetan, it sounds as strange as it does in English to call the parts of a person as heaps. Each part is called a heap in the sense of a big bunch of stuff. So like your mental, your awareness heap, the last one, the fifth one, is called a heap because you have six different kinds of consciousness.
But these are the skandhas?
Yeah, the Sanskrit is skanda. And it's a strange word in all three languages to say, oh, how are your heaps doing today? You know? Yeah, they call them aggregates. That's okay, it's kind of a long word to me. The word in Tibetan is...
when you know all the books.
Yeah, so it's punda, it's heap, it's pile. Pung means... You know, there's a famous pung in Tibetan, you know? What's
the
pung?
Oh, the heap of rice.
Yeah. So there's the pung, okay? And we're from Sera. And we always say to the Daepung people, well, you know, in Tibet, when the hail comes down, it ruins the rice. Because Sera means hail. You know, hailstones, we're better than they are. The Sera, we have a competition with them. So Sera is always destroying Daepung. So Pung means, you can imagine what that means. It really does mean heap. You wouldn't go to your neighbor and say, hey, can I borrow an aggregate of rice? You know, it means pile. And it quite simply means pile. And it was an unusual word 1,500 years ago, so Vasubandha thought he had to explain it as meaning, look, Pumbo means pile, and it's not strange because of it. So you should translate it with an unusual thing. It should be translated as pile or heap, because that's what it really means, and the ancient authors have to explain why such a weird word is used for the parts of the person. Sakche Nerlingi, Pumbo, Gyun. You know Gyun should be. Stream enter. So gin means a stream. Gin means a stream. A stream. A continuum. It's a nice word. A stream. Yang ne yang du means again and again and again.
Over and over
again.
Over and over. Over and over again.
Yeah.
Over and over again.
The same thing, right? Over and over. It just means over and over. Again and again. Again and again. Yang ne yang du. Lemba means to take. Take. To take. Ni means that's what. Ni means that's what. Korwa yin. That's what samsara means. That's what samsara is. And it's very, very... This is the classical explanation of what samsara is. You see it all, in all the ancient books. This is what they describe as samsara.
What is ki?
Of. Okay, so... Bill, take a shot at translating it. Take your time. Some people try to translate half and then they didn't get the whole sentence in their mind first before they start talking. Normally it starts from the back.
Right.
Having to lemba...
What?
Having to lemba,
right? Have to take
on
to having to take
yang ne yang
again and again.
The sakteki pumugin
impure. Oh, heaps of impure. No.
Yeah, the impure heaps which you had to take on.
Okay. Having to take on again and again the impure heaps that you have taken on.
Yeah, of the type that you've taken on. He'll explain that.
Okay.
That stream,
that's
that stream of having to do it again and again, is korva. The fact that you have to take birth over and over and over again, that long string, that constant string of dirty births, okay, of dirty parts. When he says dirty, it implies something else, right? What?
Stained, impure.
No, if he takes the point to say dirty heaps, it implies what?
That there's possibly, possible to have clean heaps.
Yeah, there are pure heaps. And when you achieve Buddhahood, when you achieve Nirvana, your dirty heaps become pure heaps. Your body is not like this. You have a body like Dharma. You have a body which is fundamentally different. It's still physical, but its nature is totally different. It has no more suffering.
State of you, because we have one.
Yeah, I will. Sakche means impure. Nirlin is a very special word. It means to take on. But it implies parts of you which you were forced to take on. You had no choice. And oftentimes you see inserted here the two words by force of your karma and your bad thoughts. You were forced to take on. You didn't say, oh, hey, I'd like to be born into a world like this, you know. You were forced. What does that eliminate, by the way? What does that exclude if we add Nirlan? That you were forced to take on by your karma and klesha.
Excludes the things you take on by your own will.
Yeah, which is trukles. Trukles take on a birth because they're not forced to. They do it by choice. Yeah, those Rinpoches, those high lamas like the Dalai Lama. He doesn't near Nen. What is Kumbos?
That's a bit confusing because do you mean to say that it's possible to be in a state where you cannot be born as it were, whether you want to or not? Or does that mean that everything has to be, you know, born one way or another? The difference is that you either control it or you have no control.
The Abhidharma explains it the second way.
The second way.
Yeah. Everything. Certain people have control.
So they then, there's, not born in one control. Sense, there is no control. Buddhas have to be Buddhas. It's not like you become extinct or something like that. It's just the difference is who can control it and who can't.
And their pungos are not sakti.
Please state the translation.
Yeah, it's a little bit tricky, okay? The condition of having to take over and over again a stream of impure parts which you were forced to take on is samsara, is what samsara means. So the goal of Buddhism, the object of renunciation is not, you know, not feeling too good sometimes, or not having peace of mind sometimes, or that's all worldly goals. It's a worldly goal to want to be peaceful in this life. It's a worldly goal to want to have some contentment with your things. You know, the goal, the lowest goal, is to want to stop the continued existence of a body like this and a mind like this. Is to want to purify the very parts that are you. That's the lowest goal. primitive.
Which leads to my next question would be then, the nature of the heaps, the impure condition, is that some sort of abnormality, that they really exist in a pure way, and that temporarily until you get them clean?
No. It's not like that. It's not like they're pure and they have some covering over them, you wipe out the covering and your Buddha nature shines for a moment.
No, so then what you mean is there's heaps, there's either pure ones or impure ones, and that's it.
But there
are always heaps.
You gotta have them.
There's always
Buddha
heaps.
Has a body, Buddha has a mind, Buddha has all those feelings.
It's impossible to be without heaps. It's either you're with pure ones or impure ones.
Right.
It's impossible to be without birth. You're either with the forced one or chosen one.
Sorry.
But in this, right?
A little bit darker on the second.
What is liberation? I mean, I thought there was a way in which beings weren't reborn.
No, I don't quite. I mean, I wouldn't say reborn the way you said it. I mean, the Abhidharmists say it close to that way. But the way in which you will take a nirmanakaya at that point, right? The form in which you show yourself on earth is totally a different thing. I mean, it's like a reflection in a mirror. The Buddha is in his paradise. Someone on earth is ready, and suddenly he's there. He doesn't have to think. He also doesn't have to take a birth. You'll study in the Abhidharma. There's four ways to take birth. One of them is just to show up there. Okay? Close everything. We have it. We'll discuss it. We will go deep into the five heaps. That will be in the Abhidharma. Very interesting.
But the historical life of Sakyamuni, it doesn't seem that it was a struggle at the beginning. It was a big search.
According to the Mahayana, according to the teachings we are studying, and you'll see both presentations in this 5 years, it was all a big show.
Rupa calls it the movie booth.
For our benefit. Okay?
He calls it the movie booth. The display that Shakyamuni put up from when he was born until he started teaching or that he became a Buddha.
Qualifying pain with impure. Is there pure pain?
No. That was only there because it's a long story. That also comes in the first chapter of Prajnaparamita, which we'll study. But basically you have to describe pleasure as dirty and clean. So therefore this pain gets called dirty. That's a good point. Okay, so what would escape from samsara be? What would escape, what's the point? Liberation means escape from samsara, what does it mean? What will happen when you escape?
It means that you don't have suffering. It means that you're not forced to.
You won't be forced after that to take on this kind of body and this kind of dirty mind. You won't have to anymore.
Where is force?
You can
do it.
It's always inserted here. Made on Yomogi Wongi. He just made it shorter.
Okay.
It's always inserted here.
So it's implicit.
So it means that your attraction towards, they say this is the desire realm, right? Towards food and sex will end it, so you will not reincarnate seeing your father and mother copulating.
Yeah, well, that's the lowest way to take a birth.
Oh, I see.
Which is a long story.
Alright.
All of these are long stories. I don't want to keep you too late. I know that some people I'm tired too, and I know I don't want to keep you guys too late. You can go, the Buddhism is deep. I mean, the Buddhism is, you can talk for your lifetime and you won't finish. And it's all meaningful. It's not like stupid talk. So liberation means not having to take a breath like that. That's what liberation is. That's what your goal is, supposedly. Your lowest goal. When you meditate on renunciation now, this week, I mean, you should be thinking, I want to get out of having to take this kind of birth again and again. We barely accept future lives. We barely accept that this is undesirable. And maybe we don't accept it.
I thought it was the first one was that you would get to, so that you didn't want to go to the lower realms, you wanted to be reborn.
Yeah, we're actually already assuming the second level of practice.
Which also means that you're not interested in taking rebirth in the heaven.
Right, because that's just, they still
this
have...
Is bad. It's worse. It's
kind of nice, actually.
What, to go and fight with people?
It's like you're youth.
Yeah, that's the demigods you're talking. Yeah, but they're in the god realms. us.
They do fight, yeah.
I mean, the contrast between the pain and the pleasure is so much more extreme in some ways. It would be much more.
But there are gods who don't fall. There are gods who are
crazy. You know, they just crash eventually.
So why... So you have to not want that to escape. That's renunciation is not wanting that. And that's what you have to meditate. And it's difficult, because we hardly believe in future lives. We still think there's a lot of nice things in this life. We don't accept that every single part of our being is impure, and that it's undesirable. We don't like to think that. He says... What keeps you chained to that samsara is nanyuniti.
So the good news is, until you free yourself from samsara, you will always exist. The bad news is, it very rarely gets even nearly as good as this, right?
Yeah.
That's the way it is. Which is, for Westerners, pretty strange, because they're more concerned with do you exist at this or not. You know, shouldn't be worried about that.
Right,
at
least. It's a lot better.
What keeps you in samsara? By the way, what does it mean now, in samsara?
In the state of mind.
To occupy the parts of your
mind. Yeah. What keeps you in yourself? Okay? I mean, people say, let's escape from samsara. Are you still in samsara? Well, I am samsara. You see, that's the trick. It's not in some place. And you'll always hear people, very few people understand what it is clearly. It's not like you leave this New York City, you know? Escaping from samsara is to change your very nature. You are samsara. Your continued existence in this form is the truth of suffering. It is samsara. That's what you're trying to escape from. Trying to escape from yourself. Interesting. Okay. Le. Say le.
Le nyun gi. Le nyun gi.
Ching. Le nyun gi.
Le nyun gi. Ching.
What does le mean? I'll give you the Sanskrit word.
Karma.
In colloquial Tibetan, it means work. You know?
Is it like action also?
Yeah, it means any. There's a famous line in the fourth chapter of the Abhinava Kosha starts out Lele Jikin Natsuke. Lenis. Leni. Lele Jikin Natsuke. Leni Semba Daneche. Semba. Kaisa. Igi Leni Semba. It means. Karma, it's defined in the Abhidharma Kosha, which is where we will study karma. When we get to the fourth year, we'll study the fourth chapter of the Abhidharma Kosha. This is like a huge chapter on karma. Everything you want to know about karma. And it says, Leni Sembo'o. Leni Sembo'o means karma is the movement of the mind.
Is that the essence of karma?
It is the definition of karma. Anytime you think, it's karma. Anytime your mind moves, it's karma. Leni sembo, wait, it's karma. Leni sembo, dang de che means, and the deeds of speech and body which it motivates.
Doesn't it also include the notion of result? I mean, isn't it implied that results follow from?
Yeah, it's a different word. Oh yeah, no, thought is the driver. And it moves your mouth and your body. But thought is the main cause.
No, but that further down the road at another point in time, you'll be the result.
Oh, sure, that's coming. Well, we're going to talk about tonight.
Is that the,
tomorrow,
the only kind of movement that occurs in the mind, or a type of movement that occurs in the mind?
I will say any movement that the mind is the main.
Okay. Then the next question is, if it's any movement, the Buddha's mind
meaning
move or not?
Yes.
So then karma can be samsaric or non-samsaric.
It's a point. I mean, they don't call it lay sapa, but he does have samba, and samba is lay.
And because so semba, Buddha's mind movement produces results in the future?
Of course.
Good day.
Only
clean,
good nice stuff.
Okay. Can you say the whole sentence again? Karma is the movement of the mind.
Lay ni sambo dang de che, and what it motivates, meaning your speech and your bodily actions. So that's what karma is. Karma means just any kind of goop, kick. Any time you move, it's gone. No, really. Okay. People struggle with that word. They say mentation, you know, or mindelation or whatever. It just means movement in the mind. It's defined as movement.
Yeah, but if you can get through it.
Okay. Nyun stands for nyomo. Nyomo means bad thought. Bad thought.
That it can be said.
Okay.
Which word?
Nyun.
Bad
thought. For example, jealousy. For example, anger. For example, ignorance. Okay, those are all nyun. Ki means by. Jing means chained. Chained. What's the PLA in Tibet? What is PLA?
It's
the Liberation Army. Okay, it's Chingpo Mani.
Death dogs.
Okay. They are the death people who free the Chinks. That's their name in Tibet. I mean, when you read propaganda in Tibet, it's Chingpo Mani. This Ching means to be chained, and the People's Liberation Army is Chingdo, which means break the chain. Len Yingi Jing. What keeps you in samsara? Which means what keeps you
karma.
What keeps you in this stream of continued existence in a body that's gotta rot eventually? Okay. What keeps you there? These two things. Your karma and your bad thoughts. What keeps you in samsara? Your karma and your bad thoughts.
So how does that tie into ignorance?
Very, very difficult question. And not something I'll do today. Then the different schools have different opinions.
So is this just another way to put it, rather than ignorance is what keeps you in samsara, or what would be more accurate? Ignorance keeps you in samsara, or
ignorance
bad
motivates
karma?
This.
So
ignorance is behind this.
So this is a
in the wheel of life, it's the pig who's got the snake and the chicken coming out.
So theoretically, if you've achieved wisdom, you have not bad thoughts.
Well, we'll explain it, and it's the purpose of this class to show how understanding emptiness can remove your bad thoughts forever. That is a big leap, right? Nirvana is the end of these bad thoughts. How does understanding emptiness have anything to do with not getting angry? We have to discuss that. And a lot of people don't draw the clear link between the two. They teach you emptiness and they teach you not to get angry, but they don't show you clearly how understanding emptiness in a practical, real-life situation tomorrow at work can prevent you from getting angry.
Isn't, to be mathematical about it, isn't Yuna some set of lit?
He asked that in a way. Yes, sort of, but not exactly. Okay, we'll talk. You want to know mushi musu between lay and no,
yeah.
And we don't have time. You'll get there. Everything we ever learn in 5 years will come back to what you're learning in this 6 weeks.
So you're equating ignorance with the bad thoughts, the nyun and the ignorance is sin.
Depends on what school you're in.
Well, in the school that you just wrote on the board.
No, I'll say these are results of ignorance.
So the nyun is thoughts produced by ignorance? Is that what you're saying?
Bad thoughts. Yes.
Is it chained by karma and our bad thoughts,
right,
or chained by
it's karma and
the
bad
action
thoughts.
Of our bad thoughts?
No, it's not that. It's karma and bad thoughts. Lei dong yong mo.
So this phrase is just hanging here. How does it relate to everything else?
It's the answer to the question, what keeps you in samsara? And of course, again, it's not like some big lock on your leg that keeps you in New York City. It's very subtle. What keeps those stream of dirty parts of a person going? What perpetuates your existence in this dirty, mortal, kind of vulnerable body and mind? It's Leyen Yomu. Okay? Alright? Got it?
The Nyun was short for Nyurmon?
Sure. Yeah.
Nyurmon.
Yep.
Flacious, huh?
Nyurmon. Yeah. So why is... What use is renunciation then? What's the object of renunciation? What is renunciation tired of? Renunciation means to be tired of something.
The hips?
Samsara. Yeah.
The hips. Yeah. The meaning your hips, I'm sorry, the impure.
Yeah, your body and your mind as they exist today. If you are what you seem to be. And I don't know. Okay? Alright?
No.
I can't know. Alright. And the famous thing is, if you don't understand what samsara is, you'll never be able to have compassion. It will never come. People come to New York, one of these 72-hour teaching things, they say, you got to have bodhicitta. They talk about bodhicitta. But if they don't teach you what samsara is, then you don't know what you're trying to get out of. And you can't have... It's impossible to have any concern for other people because you don't know what to be concerned about. What you're supposed to worry about is their samsara. And if you don't know what your samsara is, then it's useless. You can't have compassion because you don't have... You don't know what you're being compassionate about. And then there's this wrong idea that, you know, I wish I could give him some peace of mind in this life. Or, you know, I wish I could teach him to feed himself. Or things like that. It's not that. The lowest level of motivation is to want him to get out of his dirty heart. To want him to change his very being.
You said it's wrong motivation. I'm not sure if I follow that. Isn't
that what I mean is... I mean, the very lowest motivation that compassion can have is to look at another person and say, like me, he has dirty heaps.
Yeah.
And they will... There's nothing about those five parts to him that are not suffering.
Right.
There's not one atom among those five parts of him which is not suffering all the time.
And then the motivation to act... Engaging bodhicitta is doing something, which is what you just said was wrong.
Well, what I mean is,
that's incomplete. That's not a motivation. That's a realization.
The definition of Changsam is Zope Chang Chubla mixing, like a Dol Zochan, the Nick Duba, the Sundan Chirpe, Techen Jugu Lix Nepe, Techen Nabrin Kibar Chen. Definition of Changsam, which you will learn. Okay? And it's looking at enlightenment to help those people get out of their samsara. Not to give them some temporary comfort or, you know.
So how does that have that temporary comfort?
All the bodhisattva vows and all the things that you're studying for bodhisattva, it does state all those kinds of, ordinary, what we think of as compassion, as things that you should do, you must do, it's important to do. Why?
They're byproducts.
Why is that training?
They're just byproducts. If you want him to get out of samsara altogether, if you get him out of samsara altogether, of course he'll have enough to eat. And of course he'll never need a place to sleep again. And of course he'll not need vocational training. You know, and so on and so on. No, really. Really. Give him that. And it's practice. They say at the beginning you give vegetables. You know, the high bodhisattvas, you say, can I have your eyeball? And they pull their eyeball out of their head and give it to you. But the book says, don't do it. You're not ready. Give vegetables. So it's something preparatory, okay?
So does a person get tremendous bad karma for causing a bodhisattva to get pull their eyeball out of their head? Therefore, why would the bodhisattva give somebody such a bad karma?
Okay.
Or should we be asking everybody for their eyeball?
All right. Now you have to write
I
the guardian that gave his head to a young man wanted it.
And he put it back on, didn't he?
I thought it floats forever in.
Ay, yeah. What's the book you're studying?
Three principal.
Oh, yeah. Interven, you remember?
Oh.
Nonsense, okay. Three principal paths. And in that case, we made a big deal about path meaning what?
Process. More of a result than anything else, a realization.
A mental attitude. But, and this book is a very, very, is the ultimate distillation. It's the ultimate essence of those books called Lamrim. Lamrim. And Lamrim means steps of the path. Rim means steps, Lam means path. Steps along the path. Okay, so here the path is that concept. It is that way to Buddhahood. Lamrim. Stages of the path. And it's specific steps. Specific steps. It's just steps on the path. Do this first, do this second. It's like an instruction manual for a lawnmower.
Okay. So it stays a bit.
I don't know. I don't think so. But I don't get into it. It's not the same law as the law we're studying. Okay, obviously. It's the stages to the path. The steps on the path. The steps of the path. It's just like an instruction manual. Do this first, do this second, do this third. That's all the rim means. So there's lots of rimbas. There's a lot of them. And these are two. These are two of the most famous ones. These are two that we're going to talk about tonight. The first is called Deonjor. And the second is called Chiwa Mikdam. Say Deonjor.
Deonjor.
Chiwa.
Chiwa.
Mikdakpa.
Mikdakpa.
Chiwa.
Chiwa.
Mikdakpa.
Okay.
These are two rimbas?
So these are rimbas?
These are two rimbas. Rimbas. Yeah. These are two of the rimbas to the path, love. And a lot of people get it mixed up. They don't understand that rimba means a step and that there's many rimbas and they're all parts of the love. And they mistranslate love really. There's many, many rimbas.
What's the meaning of that word?
This one here? Lam means path.
Right.
And rimba means step. Uh-huh. Okay, step number one, step number first you have to do this, second you have to do this, third you have to do this. So it means steps on the path. Each step you have to take.
Now these are two, these, not the first
these are the
two
most famous steps. Well, you can say Shinin Tenzo is the first, but we don't. We're just talking about renunciation right now. Okay. Del literally means slow in Tibet. Del means slow. Tebu, tebu means slow. Go slow.
Slow.
Okay. It's translated as leisure, which is not a bad translation, because that's when things are slow at work, you have more leisure.
Leisurely.
Leisure, okay. Leisure. Delwa. And jorpa. Jorpa means, they translate it as fortune, which is not a bad translation. It's a good translation. So you say leisure and fortune. Leisure and fortune. That's one kind of meditation.
Yeah.
Leisure. Either one. It doesn't exist. It's neither B nor B. It's between. I get in fights with students about that. You can really take your choice. And you see it both ways. So, Deonjor meaning the leisure and fortune that you have, they're listed in the book. There's eight of each. But basically, you can guess what they are. You were born as a human being. You know, you have eyes and ears, you can hear everything. You're intelligent. Buddhism takes intelligence. You have to be intelligent. You have to be intelligent. You have to be able to have some way to distinguish between good and bad. You have to have some way to think. You have to understand emptiness, and your raw understanding of emptiness, your intellectual understanding of emptiness, is going to have to overcome your instincts that you have always had for eons. Okay? An intellectual understanding, eventually, from this class, supposedly, will have to overcome your instincts. Your instincts to hurt someone back when they hurt you. Your instincts to say something back when they say something to you. The normal instincts that people even accept, which are considered moral and legal, you're going to have to overcome them through raw intelligence. So you have to have Daljo. You have to have a good brain. You have to be born in a place where Buddhism exists. You know, there's like, I don't know, 200 million people in this country never heard much about Buddhism at all. And never will. They don't have Daljo.
But they know Richard Gere.
Excuse me?
They know Richard Gere.
Yeah. No, you are one in a million. I mean, you are one in half, what? One in...
250.
One in, more than one in a million. You're like one in 2 million or something. It's extremely rare. You have a rare opportunity. Nye means to find. To find. And ka means difficult. Difficult. So this is a meditation that you do. This meditation is one of the two lamrims, one of the two steps on the path, which is supposed to remove half of your desire. What are the two kinds of desire you can have?
Food and sex.
Yeah. No, that is, by the way, the definition by the first Dalai Lama of the desire realm. I mean, that's mainly why we're here and what we're interested in. I mean, why we're at this level. If you remove that, if you're able to make it less, your mind can reach a different realm. Your body's still here. And in fact, the day that you perceive emptiness directly, your mind will not be in the desire realm. During that meditation, your mind will be on the first level of the form. And it takes that concentration and it takes that distance from physical desires to perceive emptiness. You never will be able to if you don't. Directly. Okay. So, Danjor, Nyeka. Leisure and fortune, very hard to find. That's the first meditation that removes desire for this life. He divides Khyentse Phabongka and all the lamas. They divide your desire into two kinds. One is where you want the good things in this life. One is where you want the good things in your next life. People don't normally get the second one until they're about 70 years old and all their friends have died. And then I live in a temple for the last 20 years. That's when you see them come to temple. You know, on the 8th and on the 15th when we do the prayers. That's the people who are coming. You know, they gave up on this life. Not by renunciation, but by force, you know. There's nothing left. Now they're starting to get the second one. They're actually starting to get a new form of desire, which is the hope that something good will happen after they die. They're just continuing the desire they had for this life while they have the energy and the youth to do it. Now they're projecting it onto the next life. But the attitude is the same. It's the same as wanting food and sex in this life and the good things, fame, position, things. They're just projecting it now. So you can divide all kinds of desires that we have into those that are focused on this life and those that are focused on the next life. Khyentse Phabongka even says those religious old people who walk around the in Dharamsala, walk around the temple there and pray to be born in a Buddha field are they're the same as somebody who's trying to become president of Citibank. You know? Same, exactly the same. It's the same desire, same motivation. And have the same result.
You mean they're doing it without bodhicitta?
They're just doing it because it's the same as somebody who wants a jaguar.
If it's done without bodhicitta,
of course. Of course. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I mean, just because they're praying to a Buddha.
Dhyan Nyeka.
So the half that removes is for this life.
This is one of the two lamrims that removes your attachment to this life. The stage you want to get to, renunciation, will be a state in which you really, there's nothing here for you. You really don't want anything here. just, you know, disgust is a little strong, but you can just, you reach a stage where you just say there is nothing. If someone gave you all day and $1 million in New York, you wouldn't know what to do with it. There's nothing you want here. You know, imagine that. If someone gave you a lot of money and said, okay, here, you got a shopping spree today. You got to give anything left at 6 o'clock, you have to give back to me. And then you go out on the street and you say, there's nothing I want. There's nothing beneficial here for me.
Well, I mean, let's say,
the first time you sent it, this meditation eliminates half of the desires, and the second time you said it eliminates half of the attachments.
Well, what I mean is same thing. I mean the same thing.
Is it attachment or desire? Because can't you have desire without attachment?
Yeah. And we can talk about it. So. The dependent word is desire attachment. It's one word. Do a chop. Mm-hmm. Ding, ding. Same thing. Okay. It means that. Okay. So, Danjo Nyeka, contemplating basically how precious the time you have is the first antidote. And you must meditate on it. You have to think about how lucky you are. Right now, you have all the circumstances. You have a Buddhist class to go to. You're healthy. You can think. It's not against the law to come here. Even the other religions in this country are tolerant. They say, okay, you can go. I mean, mostly. And nobody's outside, you know, picketing.
Not yet.
You're in a very, very rare opportunity. No, they won't. I mean, you know. You're in a very, very rare opportunity. It's very rare. And it will collapse at some point. You know, the big thing that lamas always say is that when we study the Kangyur and Tengyur, which is like 4,500 classics of Buddhism, there's a couple of them that are only half finished. Because the author died halfway through. And they say, look at the Kangyur, you know. Why does this... It ends... I mean, the people who carved the Kangyur were very, very good practitioners. They ended it. They ended the work halfway through the sentence. That's where the guy stopped writing. He died. He's a great Buddhist saint. He wrote a book in the Kangyur. He died. They leave it like that. And they carve it up to that point and they leave it. They say, look, you know, it's the way of all people. So... contemplating how lucky you are. The specific meditation is in the book. Let me see. You know which one? I think so.
In the notes, right?
It's in the notes. Yeah.
Could you add one on to that?
It's 104 and 105, okay? Note number 104 and note number 105.
Note.
Yeah, in the notes. You can find the 8. You don't have to know them for your quiz. It's just that you should study them. But those are the... You get the 8 Dhyawas and the 8 Jhorkas. And note 104 tells it to you in a negative sense. Okay, so that the eight Dhyawas would be, just to give you an example, not to be born with a wrong view, such as not believing in morality. I can do what I want, it won't come back to me. You're not born as an animal, you're not born as a spirit, you're not born in the hells, you're not born in a country where there's no Buddhism. You're not born in a place which is uncivilized. The word is taco, barbarian land. And some people leave it at that, but the text technically say that's where no one is keeping morality.
I've heard that that's where Muslims
are. Yeah, no, it's not. It's not. It's incorrect. The Tibetan word is barbaric land, but what it's always explained.
Birth is a long being of pleasure, one of the temporary paradises.
Right. That's actually a
benefit.
To be born that way. Not to be born as retarded or otherwise handicapped, and not to be born in a temporary paradise. Those are the 8 Dhammas. So you can study them, 104 and 105.
Now those are common to everybody in the United States who, you know, is healthy and so forth, right?
Pretty good.
What does that mean? That could you be, if you didn't see Dharma, even though, you know, my next door neighbor, it's... heard of Buddhism but doesn't even see the value in it or something? Could they sort of, their mind sort of be in a barbarian land or something like that?
No, barbarian, as I said, means a land where morality is not considered beneficial. But I'd say in this country, although we don't always practice morality to the level that we'd like, but I think in this country generally has a pretty high level of moral sense. You know, we don't think that killing is good. We do it, but we don't think, we're not proud of it, we don't think it's good. We don't think that adultery is good. We don't think that stealing is good. We can't control ourselves and we do these things, but we live in a country where they understand correctly that those things are wrong.
Okay.
Yeah.
This includes the Ten Commandments of the Christians, right?
Yeah, sure, sure. There's a teaching which says that that activity of teaching the Ten Commandments is the activity of the Buddha. Sangye Gichin. You'll study. Okay, the second thought that prevents attachment to this life. By the way, how would being aware of how lucky you are prevent you from being attached to this life?
It doesn't, just keeps you from wasting time.
Yeah. That's the main thing. Okay? But it's like...
Who wrote the joke? Maybe that will
It's like you go to the Jewel Island. It's a famous story. You know, Jewel Island was probably Sri Lanka. And I'm in the gemstone business, and we know it really is a Jewel Island. I mean, every kind of jewel comes there. It's just geologically something happens there. There's jewels all over the place. And they used to take ships across the straits, and it would get dangerous, and they would get the jewels and come back. So they say it's like going to the Jewel Island. You get there, there's jewels laying all over the ground. And you say, God, I hope that next time I get here, I'll take the jewels, you know. I really hope that next time I come, I'll take jewels, you know. And they're stepping on them, and they're all over the place, and you're thinking about, oh, next time I hope I pick them up, you know. They say it's crazy.
No, I meant for people who are practicing already that want to continue that, not for people who are putting them up.
You have to know this.
Yes, I do.
Please say, Nye dang,
Nye dang,
Ma nye,
Ma nye,
De dang,
De dang,
Mi de,
Mi de,
Nyen dang,
Nyen dang,
Mi nye,
Mi nye,
De me,
De me.
And I don't have much room, but I'll put it here. You must know what's on this board, okay? Very, very good. Very, very important. Say, Jigden.
Jigden.
Chugye.
Chugye.
Jigden.
Jigden.
Chugye.
Chugye.
Jigden Chugye.
Jigden Chugye.
Jigden Chugye.
Jigden Chugye.
Very, very famous, okay? Jigden means the world. The world. Ten means the world. Che means Dharma. Ge means eight.
Means what?
Eight.
Mm-hmm. What's the Dharmas?
It's the eight worldly Dharmas. Okay. I prefer to call them the eight worldly thoughts. You know, sometimes Che doesn't mean, obviously, Dharma teaching. These are bad things. And normally, Che, Dharma just means a thing. You know, one of those eight things that you're not supposed to think about. Eight worldly thoughts.
Which one is the eight? It's Gate. Then? Gate?
Shuge.
Yeah, you should know that, okay?
Shuge.
Jikten is world. Shu is. I'm translating as thought, but it's Dharma. Okay? And Ge means eight. And you should know that. The first Jikten Shuge is Ni. Getting something. Getting what you hope to get. Job. I had a lady call me up last night for 2 hours or something. What kind of prayers can I do to get a good job? Yeah, okay. Getting something. Getting. Manye, ma is negative, right? So what does manye mean?
Getting and not getting.
Getting and not getting.
What's the dang mean?
Dang means and. So getting and not getting. By the way, these eight I'm quoting directly from a verse by Nagarjuna. Okay? He lived 1700 years ago. And this is his advice to a king. Nagarjuna.
He's not quoting the eight worldly dharmas that the Buddhas spoke of?
Of course.
Then.
But this verse is from Nagarjuna.
The way it's
explained. Okay. Day means to feel good. Dung means and. Me day means what?
Not
feeling good. Feeling bad. Feeling good and feeling bad. Getting something and not getting it. Feeling good and feeling bad. Yen means being well known. Getting well known. Lots of people know you. Well known. Yen. Famous. Well known. I don't think it has to be as strong as fame, you know? I mean, you and I don't think we hope for fame. It's too late, right? Madonna's got fame and we're not going to get there. But, you know, just that, you know, people know, oh, Nitya, oh, man, yeah. Isn't he the guy that sold that painting for $40,000 at that show on 39th Street? Okay. Nyen da minyen. Minyen means not getting famous. Not having, not being well known. You go to the Port Authority and no one recognizes
you. Exactly. You have to go to the Port Authority. Dante's Inferno.
Do means having people say nice things to you. Oh, you're so smart, Dante.
Hearing flattery, is that what you mean?
It's not the word for flattery. I mean, there's a different word for flattery.
Hearing good sounds or good words?
Having people say nice things about you. People praising you. Good job, Sean Kyler.
Getting praised.
Huh? You really did a good job on that computer network. And May is the opposite. You stupid head. I told you 2 weeks ago you're supposed to have it done. Still doesn't work. Say something bad to you. May. Me means to say something bad to you. De means to say something good to you. Me means to say something bad to you.
Is this also from Letter to a Friend?
This is the verse of Friend. I mean, this is
it
chopped,
is the
I
verse
chopped it out.
Yeah, but it's not
from the Guardian's letter.
It's not a footnote on the. It just continues. It says the next verse is from Letter to a Friend.
You're supposed to avoid these eight, like the plague. They are attachment to this life. If you did not have attachment to this life, these eight wouldn't happen to you. Did I just say a true statement?
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
Avoid them or just
wait,
not
wait,
be
that's somebody else talk about. Laura, what do you think?
What?
Can you avoid these eight? And would that make you a good person?
Can you avoid
And would it stop your attachment to this life? Can you avoid these eight? Can you avoid getting things and not getting things? Can you avoid feeling good or feeling bad? Can you avoid having people, being well known and not being well known?
If you get something without attachment to it, I guess it's okay because you have to stay alive.
Right. The point is that you can't avoid these eight conditions. The point is not to avoid these eight conditions. They occur. They will happen to you. You never will be able to avoid them. I mean, until your practice gets really good, okay? They will happen to you. They will happen to you. Either you'll get what you hope for or you won't get it. Either you'll be feeling good or you won't be feeling good. Either people will, you'll get well known around your office, say, or you won't be well known. And either people will say nasty things to you all day, or your boss will yell at you, which happens more often. The point is not to be what? Attached to them, not to be upset by them.
Equanimity.
It is a sign of attachment for this life that you get upset or happy about, upset by the second member of every pair, and happy at the first member of every pair. And as long as you are, if you want to know the litmus test, what is the point at which you don't have renunciation yet? It's where you care about any of those. And they're hard. When you don't feel well, when you're sick, I had a really bad headache Saturday, I was throwing up. I mean, tell me not to feel bad about throwing up. Tell me not to feel bad about having a splitting headache, It's very difficult. Not to get upset when you don't feel well. And not to get too high when you're feeling really great. It's just attachment to this life.
But wait a minute. It doesn't seem to me that that's necessarily equivalent to renunciation.
Well, so I'm saying that when you have reached renunciation, you won't have the eight attitudes about those eight things. And it's a test of your renunciation. And you see it. You see God. My Lama likes to watch the New York Mets on TV. And this guy strikes out, the guy strikes out and you see his face, he's walking back to the just a man, And then the next time he gets up, he hits a home run, and he's like... And it's crazy, it's stupid, it's insane. Okay, sometimes you hit a home run, sometimes you won't, to get all... The look in the face tells you. I mean, Clinton's face and Bush's face on the night of the election, after the results were out. That's Jigten. I mean, Lamas sit around and they see those on TV and say, Jigten Chigye, Jigten Chigye. Jigten Chigye. Eight Dharmas. Look, here's the eight Dharmas on these two guys' face. On these two faces. Clinton's is just as bad as Bush's. To be that happy about the meaningless thing of this life. And to be that sad about a meaningless thing in this life, you don't have renunciation.
If you become unattached by this 8 point, you gain a lot of freedom, I guess. From opinions of the world, from feelings, from anything, values that you carry along.
Well, I think, you would be very happy. You'd be much happier without them. And then you can't avoid them. How old do you have to be before you finally figure it out? With 40, I'm 40, I still get upset when someone yells at me. And I still get happy when the boss says, oh, you're so smart. And I go tell people, oh, he's so smart. And then the next day, he says, you're so stupid. And I tell everybody, oh, he's crazy, he thinks I'm stupid. And I get upset. I still... And how many years have to go by, How many decades have to go by before you figure out this? It's going to keep being like that. It will always be like that. And
it proves emptiness, doesn't it?
Yeah, so how to exist in some balanced way in the context of these eight worlds of darkness?
It's to be aware. We call shishin. Shishin means, you heard them tonight. So the process starts, or maybe you heard them before. But now you start meditating on it. You start watching it. You say, so what does it mean that I shouldn't feel good about feeling good? And isn't that sort of contradictory? And by the way, it's not... I tell you that the goal of Buddhism is to feel good. But in a totally high ecstasy that will never change. and this is not done.
So is the idea that this is sort of the essence of duality and we're trying to always be aware of
it? Not like that. That's not the duality that means the absence of which is emptiness is not like that. That's not what duality means. And we'll get there. Paramavartika, fourth year. End of the first chapter.
Yeah. Is this that idea of the middle way?
No. I mean, this is a middle way, but it's not what the middle way means. That's a different subject. It just means, you know, watch yourself, the attitudes that you have about these things. And the ignorant reaction is when someone hurts you, when someone says something bad to you, or when you walk in the office and the girl in the reception won't let you in because she never heard of your name and you've been working there for 12 years. And, you know, not feeling good. But that happened to me the other day. Not feeling good, okay? Not just, you know, hurting. You're not well, you got a headache, you're tired. And not, you know, not getting what you want. Basically, they come from your past deeds. Every atom of your life comes from your past deeds. So, and the natural reaction is what? You know, I got the girl in trouble, you know.
That's natural. Because she didn't know who you
made,
were.
I made her boss and figure out, you know, I told her boss, I'm the vice president. And literally I came down, she apologized. And then minyan means, you know, somebody says something bad to you. And just you go home and you think, you meditate on what you're going to say tomorrow. You know, you meditate on it. You do. That's analytical meditation. That's jiggle.
Is that the point of this?
Somebody says something bad to you. The point is that later, you will, when you understand emptiness and karma, when you study those two subjects in depth, which we will, karma comes next week, emptiness comes weeks 4 and 5, you will see why the natural reaction only perpetuates what you were trying to avoid. The natural reaction to someone saying something bad to you, you're stupid, is that you go and you tell your friend, you go out to lunch with your friends. That we do. That's what we do at lunch, you know. And this guy is so stupid today. He was saying bad things about me. You know, he doesn't understand me. You know, we spend our lunch time today. You know? That's the natural reaction. It's the natural reaction. We spend lunch today. That's what's bothering you.
No, it's not.
No, later. The natural reaction is precisely, karmically, the cause which will make that thing happen to you again.
Right.
And that's why samsara is called what?
Karma.
Yeah. It's precisely the meaning of karma. The natural reaction. These four, 8, 6, 4, and 2.
When you consider the vows, like the bodhisattva vows, there is the first precept that takes care of the fact that the tendency is to criticize others and to praise yourself. Right?
So these four, the natural reaction to the four negative ones, is to hurt the person back. And that's exactly what will hurt him back. When you don't get what you want, you go out, you fight for it. When you don't feel well, you're irritable and cross and you say bad things to people. When you didn't get enough sleep, for example. When the girl at the reception doesn't know you, you make sure she finds out. And when your friend at work says something bad about you, you make sure everyone knows how bad he is. And those are exactly the causes that will make him occur again in your future. So that's what generates a circle. The natural reaction is exactly what causes it to occur again, and then what will happen?
I don't know.
No, you'll be the receptionist.
It'll happen again. And then what will you do? You do it again, and then what will happen? You know what I mean? That's the karma.
You don't mean to say to avoid these things by losing the distinction between good and bad. You still see them as good and bad, but you just don't react in a bad way. Right?
We're getting it. Now, how do you react to the first form? You get what you get.
Attraction.
And you're happy. Okay? and you feel good, and you say, oh, finally I found the perfect balance of diet and exercise. which is this thing that doesn't really exist that everyone's trying to get, you know? And yin, you know, finally people figured out who I am. I saw my name in the newspaper today. And then two, you know, finally my boss said, you know, really, you're really the best worker here. I said, well, finally you realized it, you know. What's the natural reaction then? You get attached to it.
But your work should be not to be too excited about it, just to keep cool.
Yeah, well, all you're doing is that you're just getting a natural result of something you did good before. Probably not related to what he's praising you for. You know? You got him some profit. It's because he did something good before and because you did something good before. It has nothing to do with the great lie that you told and the contract you struck that screwed the other guy. And then you'll go and do it again, and you'll just get a bad result. You won't get it again. That's the principle. Okay. 8 worldly dharmas. You meditate on them, you think about them. Especially the hardest one to me is when I'm not feeling well, I really think I have some special rights, you know, or that I have a reason to not be happy. But as you begin to understand emptiness more, even when your body is hurting, and even when you're very tired, if you understand that something is morally correct, you'll do it. Despite the body, you'll be able to ignore it.
So is the purpose then of being mindful of the 8 worldly dharmas to break the attachment aversion?
Yeah.
Trying to get to what the ultimate purpose is?
Ultimately, you must study emptiness to break it. But they present it at this point just so you start getting in the habit of struggling against them. You know, you don't have the equipment yet to nuclear blast them, which you will.
Yeah.
You will get. But all you have now is someone telling you these are wrong, and you have to start the struggle.
Hey, Tony, I'm still low grade here.
Start the fight. Start the struggle now. Okay, I'm going to hand out some homework. And then we'll do a dedication.
These are natural, the typical reactions to the physical.
Oh, right.
If you don't have the Buddha,
I didn't say that the conditions for the Dharma is the feeling about the conditions.
No, you said these are wrong. What you mean to say is
Okay, you ready? Still well, one second.